Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano in studio with Walker Wildman, assistant to the president, and Fred Jackson, who was news director, no, who is news director for American Family News on News Now, was in here. He's been replaced by Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Steve, welcome in.
You can't replace someone like Fred Jackson.
You can't.
You can just hope to kind of not look stupid after you speak after him.
Very, very knowledgeable guy. Been in the reporting and radio news business field for a long, long time, starting with being up in Canada with the CBC. Is that what it's called up there?
The Canadian Broadcasting Company. Yep. I'm not sure if that's who he was with. It was like the Canadian AP, so whatever that was.
Yeah. So anyway, we love our Fred Jackson, even if I give him a hard time. All right, Steve, let's go to the news.
You know, we talked yesterday about this shooting, the 19th officer that was killed in the line of duty in Clinton, Missouri.
Right.
The officer's name was Christopher Ryan Morton. He was 30 years old. And
responding to a domestic violence call.
And this story this morning took just a tragic and odd twist. So it turns out that the dispatcher sent this officer and his partners to the wrong house.
Really?
They meant to send him to the house with the ladies that were in the background of the call, the commotion that was heard in the background of the call. But instead, they sent him to an address that was about 15 miles away. Now, they say, and they're not being real specific about this at this point, but they say that the two houses were somehow related, the same owner, the same something, but they sent the officer to the wrong house. The officer shows up at the wrong house. Officer Morton and his colleagues show up at the wrong house, thinking it's the right house. They knock on the door, and they are given access to the house, and they discover something illegal, and I think it might have had something to do with drugs or meth. And then the officer was a shooting match started. I mean, they started shooting, and Officer Morton was killed. But he was sent to the wrong house.
That is,
and it's
odd.
Just almost a terrible coincidence that something illegal was going on in that house that they stumbled upon.
Kind of wrong place, wrong time,
oh,
kind of thing.
So tragic, yeah, and so. It's just odd.
Now, did the 911 operator give the officer the wrong address?
Yeah, or, it appears that way.
So did the caller give, I'm trying to find out if this is intentional. Did the caller give the operator the wrong address?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
I'll just read you. This is
because that'll be interesting to.
This
know.
Is from the Fox News story. It says a Missouri officer fatally shot while responding to a 911 call was sent to the wrong house, about 15 miles away from where he and two other officers were supposed to be, according to authorities. Clinton police officer Christopher Ryan Morton was shot and killed when he and two officers responded to the 911 call, in which two women were heard screaming in the background. None of the women directly spoke to the 911 operator. The 911 call that came in was somehow attached to that Clinton address. But the officers were sent to an address in Clinton, even though the home that the officers should have been responding to was in a town called Windsor. It's about 15 miles away. The dispatcher mistakenly led the three officers to the home unrelated to the call.
Hmm. Wow. Well, that is strange, and I appreciate you updating us on that, because there were questions yesterday when you first brought up this story. Anytime there's something like this where something goes wrong, and this doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes a drug raid will go to the wrong house, you know, and those kind of things can happen.
I did speak with the public information officer, he's a member of the Missouri Highway Patrol, who's running point for communications with this case. And I asked him specifically, I talked to him before this wrong address issue was known.
Yeah.
And so I asked him when he was sent to the house, because, you know, I just, was it an ambush? Was it a setup?
Right.
And he said,
that
no,
does happen sometimes,
yeah,
too.
He said there's no indication that it was anything other than a domestic violence, an actual domestic violence call that he responded to, which, as we've mentioned, is one of the most dangerous calls that a police officer can
emotions
tempers
are at,
high,
yep,
and anger and all that kind of stuff. So just an update
And
on
by
that.
Ambush, what we mean is, and this is very rare in terms of the vast number of police calls that are made and answered by law enforcement, but sometimes someone wanting to kill a police officer will phone in a phony domestic abuse call.
Or any kind of call.
Or any kind of call, and then wait for the police officer to show up to investigate, and then they open fire. So that's what we mean when we say ambush.
Right.
All right. What else you got?
Well, the Mueller probe. And why don't we just go ahead and list this from the Russia files?
Oh, come on, Brent. We can do a little better than that. Do we not have a little bit longer?
I think that's the only
one
we got left.
That's the only one we got left. Is that little 3-second tribute to...
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Sit back and enjoy it, folks. Manly men.
The rest of the show.
Singing. All right, that's... I'm not rushing, folks. And apparently Brent is not rushing this song.
Brent's going to randomly interrupt your sentences with the Russian music.
Yeah, just it's kind of like the playoff music at the Academy Awards. If you go too long, the orchestra starts.
Oh, is it?
We're going to have playoff music for Ed. And
that's what they call
Russian.
It, playoff music?
I think that's what they call it, yeah.
To get you off the stage?
When you've done your part and your time is up, instead of just cutting the mic, they start playing music. And that's when you know that you're supposed to
go.
Supposed
All right.
To go.
All right.
All right.
Russia
so
files.
From the Russia files, the Democrats are starting to question a meeting that happened in the Seychelles, which is a group of islands in the Indian Ocean. And this meeting, among those who attended this meeting, was a gentleman named Eric Prince. Eric Prince is the founder of Blackwater Security. And they say that he might have misled the Congress, and that he is that at this meeting, the purpose of the meeting might have been, they say, to coordinate election issues with the Russians. This is they're trying to get down to a smoking gun or as close as they can to link to close this loop between the Russians and Donald Trump.
Now, this is the thought here. Just want to make sure I understand. Because now, I think we've established over the months and months that this has been going on, is that there is nothing illegal about an incoming administration starting up back channel discussions with leaders from around the world, right?
It happens all the time. Everyone
happens
does.
All the time.
You can't just hit the Oval Office day one,
right,
and not have any clue as to who to talk to or who's on the other side of the table.
Yeah. So this is the suspicion from the Democrats, is that this instead was an attempt to set up meetings with the Russians about what?
Well, also at this meeting was a gentleman named George Nader, N-A-D-E-R. He is described as a Lebanese-American businessman and Middle East specialist with ties to the Trump team and also ties, they say, to sources in Russia. So what they're saying, and this is what they're trying to get him on, is false testimony before the a committee, a congressional committee. You know, they're always sworn in before these things go. And they are this meeting apparently happened in January of 2017, and it was in the Seychelles. And they say they are trying to determine whether, and this is a quote, it was an attempt to set up secret communications between the Trump administration and Russia, which again goes to your point.
Yeah, about what? I mean, I don't understand. This is something I don't understand. Now, what they're going after Prince on is when he was, you know, interviewed and when he gave testimony before this panel, the House Intelligence Committee, mm-hmm. that he didn't reveal everything. He didn't reveal that he met with this George Nader. fellow who's a Lebanese-American businessman, Middle East specialist with ties to the Trump team, that maybe he wasn't completely honest or he didn't give... Okay, so again, all that they seem to be able to get people on is they said the wrong thing while they were testifying. But the meat of the accusation that's been made by Democrats when we kid around about collusion is that the Trump team before the campaign, before the election, colluded with the Russians to try to influence the election. That's the accusation.
Right.
And then after he won, he did what with the Russians? What is it? Is this accusation of a cover? I mean, January 2017,
right.
You're talking about just before the inauguration.
Right, right.
So
you would expect them to be going and setting up their
and if it's
lines
secret,
of communications.
Secret makes it sound like there's something illegal going on, but I'm sure our government meets all the time secretly
right.
with other countries. Where's the beef?
The fact that we are over a year into this investigation and there are millions of dollars in resources going into the investigation, probably maybe over 100 people interviewed by the special counsel or by the congressional committees who are also investigating this. The fact that not one person or one fact of criminal activity has been found regarding the election, that right there is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, everything seems to be they're finding that this person didn't disclose this to the committee or,
right.
In the case of Flynn, maybe lied or maybe not.
Because with other examples, such as Secretary Clinton's private use of a private email server for government business where classified information was hosted on that server, in the onset of the FBI investigation or the lack thereof, that was the crime that was being investigated.
Right.
Is whether the Secretary of State knowingly used a private email server despite federal laws against it for government business. So we have a crime.
Yes.
What looks like a crime but hasn't been charged or convicted yet. What appears to be a crime, that's what's investigated.
And evidence of that crime.
Yes, and there's hard evidence on it.
Is clear. You know, whatever. Comey, says, James Comey says about Secretary Clinton's intentions regarding that.
Right.
You know, we can argue about all that, but there is an actual crime being investigated. There's evidence of a crime, whether there's a prosecution and but this,
it's like we don't. There might be a crime.
The only things that the infractions or crimes they seem to be getting their hands on is in the course of investigating. People are either making mistakes, maybe they are telling lies, I don't know.
Right.
But it's almost like while we're investigating this crime over here, we're finding out that people aren't being totally truthful, so we're going to go after them.
Right.
But that's not really what the Russian investigation
is.
No,
it wasn't. Right. And what strikes me is that every time you hear a leak or something like this, you hear about them hiding or tens of thousands of emails or messages or communications. To me, it seems... It undermines the narrative that you're lying if you can't remember specific instances out of 1 out of 10,000.
To me,
that's a human equation. Was he there? I don't remember. Did I send that?
I might have.
It's 2 years ago. I'm not sure. But this whole thing is based on nothing but intention. It's all about the mindset because, as you guys have said multiple times, there's nothing criminal about meeting, even an American meeting with a Russian. If they gave them the nuke codes,
right.
Then you've got a crime. If they told them, here's a list of all of our election servers in each state, go for it, then you've got a crime. But that's an action, and they haven't, I don't believe, to anything I've read, they've come close to anything. It's all, well, they intended to do this. Did they, want to find the whole meeting with in Trump Tower that was dissected ad nauseum a while back is a good example.
Donald Trump Jr.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he went, Donald Trump Jr. went because he thought that there might be information damaging to Clinton. Well, now you know, you're supposed to know what he thought and why he went,
right.
And nobody is saying that anything damaging. In fact, they said that that meeting was irrelevant to the election. It was about adoption.
Right.
So they have to, and there's two tracks here. We talk about convictions. We talk about the goal of an investigation. There's the legal track, what they can charge someone with in a court of law, which has to have certain evidence, and there's rules to what you can bring into that court, and there's rules on how you have to conduct it to find a legal challenge or a legal conviction. But then there's the political battle that's going on.
Right.
And the rules are – there are no rules.
Right.
So you can – you it's the appearance of evil. It's guilt by association. And I don't know that my opinion – just so you know it's opinion. I don't know that the Democrats really care either way which one of those ends up skewering the administration and damaging the president as long as he's skewered and damaged.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right, what else you got?
I got to look at my list here because it was a busy morning for me. Hey, can we do something from – I haven't told Brent about this, but do we have the Dumb and Dumber Files theme there that we can play?
The Dumb and Dumber Files.
Dumb and Dumber Files. Hartford, Connecticut. Dateline Hartford, Connecticut. A man is going to court to face charges of stealing a car. He was out on bond, and he drives up to the courthouse in a stolen car.
I saw the headline on this morning. Didn't have a chance to click on it. So this guy is facing charges of car theft.
Car theft. Yeah. And I'm bringing this up again. My phone.
And so he drives up for his court date in a stolen car.
In a stolen car.
So nice. How do they find that out that it was a stolen car?
Well, they have cameras around, I guess. I mean, if you know a guy that is suspected of being a drug dealer is coming to your court, you're going to search him for drugs, right?
Well, bring the drug dog out.
They're probably a little they're a little leery of this guy.
And sometimes police in different communities, metropolitan areas, they have software. They have cameras and software.
Yeah.
As they drive down the street, they take pictures of license plates, and they can immediately run those.
They do.
And and check if a car or vehicle is stolen or if there are outstanding.
And I don't know if that was it was at the courthouse that this happened. So here's what we know of the details from the Hartford Courant. This gentleman's name was Jonathan Rivera. He was at a superior court in Hartford, which if it's like California, where I grew up, Superior Court is actually the lower part of the state court. And it happened on Wednesday. He was answering to charge of first-degree larceny and tampering with a motor vehicle involved in the theft of a car in Hartford. Well, as he waited to appear before the judge, Hartford Parking Authority agents scanned the license plate for parking violators and got a hit on a white 2014 Suburban Legacy was parked in the courthouse. Well, it turns out that the plates had been reported stolen and that the car itself had been stolen. And that's the one he was driving to his court appearance.
So he not only had stolen plates, because that's something that people will do. They'll take plates off one vehicle.
Right.
And they put it on a car that was stolen.
Right. So
wow. What do they call it? The Darwin Awards?
Darwin. Yeah.
Where natural selection.
Well, in this case, no one was killed, but Mr. Rivera was charged with second-degree larceny and taking a motor vehicle without the owner's permission, which is another way of saying stealing a car.
Stole it. So that's one of those deals where it's not going to go well in the first charge because you showed up for your court date.
Right.
And got arrested again.
Right, no.
What is he going to say to the judge when he finally goes, "No, Your Honor, I didn't steal that first car. Now, maybe that second car, yeah, but you can trust me on the first one."
Trust me. Trust me. Would I lie to you?
Yeah.
And then here's another. this is also, we could play this from the same Dumb and Dumber Files.
I got to hear the music.
No. Okay. Don't know much
about history. Okay. I'm not a big fan of that song, but... We have to make sure that all these stories have the appropriate song coming before it.
There you go. Yeah. Dateline, Oklahoma. Owasso, Oklahoma. This is a gentleman named Jonathan Michael Davis. He's 34 years old, and he was starting to act suspiciously, and he was away, and he started sending his wife texts from that he had been kidnapped, and the texts were from his kidnappers to his wife, saying, you know, get some money together.
We've got your husband.
We've got your husband, and they even the wife was even sent a picture of a broken finger, saying we're going to break more of these. Well, it didn't take long. The police decided they want to know where these kidnappers are, so they started doing a cell trace on the phone, and it led them to none other than the man who was the husband, Jonathan Davis. He was faking it, and they caught him at a casino. He was gambling while sending his wife these things, send money, basically, if you want your husband back.
So wow. He obviously was losing money, needed more, and so this is strange. This is bizarre, because he's asking his wife for money, I guess because he didn't want her to know where he was losing money. That's a weird one.
Because
you might ask somebody else desperate. For money. To hey, we got your brother.
Yeah,
but
right.
He's trying to get money from his own bank account.
Well,
to cover up his losses. Maybe?
Well, but you know they probably asked for more than they had in the bank account. So she's going around to family and friends and other people to try to get
sense.
Money. The message is demanded that the money be deposited into a PayPal account. And the message contained a photo of the broken finger, and they're going to continue breaking fingers until they pay, according to the Owasso Police Department. The officers tracked Davis's cell phone to the River Spirit Casino in Tulsa, where they found him gambling alone at the table, carrying the cell phone used from
Boy,
the...
you talk about not thinking. Because what are you going to do when you get home and you have to fabricate an entire
yes.
story about how
and
you were
police
kidnapped.
And maybe the FBI are going to ask you questions. What did they look like?
Right.
And oh my goodness.
It sounds like that he did not want to use their debit or credit card or withdraw money
right.
from the bank, because that would be evidence for his wife to see that my husband's gambling. So thus he says, transfer it to PayPal.
Owasso Police Deputy Chief Jason Woodruff had this to say. He wasn't very good at this.
Oh my. You know, these are the kind of people. Now, I don't have a very good criminal mind, so like I was trying to figure out what his why he's doing it and doing it in this way. But this is the kind of guy who, for years to come, is going to be the story.
Oh, I know.
At least one of the stories. Well, let me tell you about that case we had.
And most of the stories are going to be coming from his ex-wife.
Yeah, talk about broken fingers.
Yeah.
Now, if this guy here, he may get a couple broken when he gets back. And has to explain this to his wife. So.
Uh-huh.
Anything quick you want to share, or you got the stories done?
That's all I got on that story. And yeah, I've got. There was a Harvard is beating up on a Christian club.
And, I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah. So basically, this is a club that did two things that bothered Harvard. They dismissed one of their leaders who's having a same-sex relationship, and they invited an ex-gay person to come and speak. And so Harvard put them on this group on probation. No penalties, and they can still work, but the charge is now that Harvard is just kind of picking on this group because they don't like their politics.
You know, this is happening across the country. I'm not saying it's happened on every university campus,
right.
But it happens not infrequently where a Christian club doesn't play by progressive, quote-unquote progressive rules and political correctness, and they get punished, oftentimes cast off the campus and, you know, don't get student fees, what
right.
have you. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for today's issues. Tomorrow is Trivia Friday. More great programming directly ahead.